Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Today we're joined by Tony Alvarez. Tony's been an appraiser, a residential rehabber, a property manager, and creator, most recently, of The Path of Least Resistance, How I Went from Bankruptcy to $10 Million in 7 years, Just Making Friends. Tony, we welcome you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Why don't we go back a little bit and how you got your start in real estate?
Okay, that's pretty interesting. The start came about because I really wanted to. I used to watch all those infomercials on TV about how to become wealthy and all that kind of stuff, and I bought into all of it. I thought, okay, I think I can do this, you know. So I started buying every course I could get my hands on. I probably own everything that's ever been sold on late night TV on how to make your fortune. You know, whether in all honesty, whether it was in real estate or whether it was doing whatever.
Okay.
But then I went out to buy, to invest in my first property, and I discovered that it was a little bit more difficult than I really had planned, or even that they really discussed in some of these programs. Mm-hmm. So that led me to want to become a real estate appraiser because I didn't really know how to identify value. I remember the one defining moment was I was standing in front of a house in Burbank, California, and I had gone there with a real estate agent. And as I was standing in front of this house, I was in total panic and fear inside myself, even though I was smiling to him. He came over, put his arm around my shoulder, and he said, "You really need to buy this immediately because this is a great deal." And then he walked away, and I realized in that moment I had no clue mm-hmm. if that was a great deal or if it wasn't.
So very susceptible to somebody else's opinions.
Sure, and yeah. So I walked away from that one meeting thinking, okay, I need to go figure out how to identify value so that I never have to rely on anyone else, you know, telling me whether something is a great deal or not ever.
Now, has that skill come in handy when you're dealing with negotiating? Let's say a broker has a listing, and they have an opinion that they feel very strongly about. Because of your training, are you able to go, well, why don't we consider this and make a case for your offers?
Yeah, sure. As a matter of fact, I don't believe becoming an appraiser ever hindered me at all. I was able to get the benefits of it, which made me very strong. Even just the mere fact that I mentioned that to a real estate agent made them feel more comfortable with whatever I said.
Right.
And also lenders. That's gone on to help me when I'm presenting offers and the lender questions whether, you know, the offer is ridiculous or not. Mm-hmm. The agent is able to say to them in a nice way, you know, we're talking about a certified general appraiser here who's approved by your bank to appraise for you. You should take his offer seriously.
Very quickly, you went from single family to starting to do small units.
Yeah, apartments. Okay. I actually, that was because I was an appraiser. I was appraising properties, and at the time I was working for Great Western Bank. They used to be around back then. I was doing some appraisals for other investors, and these guys were buying they were buying duplex, a triplex, four units, and they were – because you can get better financing,
yeah,
up to 100%.
Right, mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that woke me up. I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm doing single families, but, hey, maybe I could do some of these. And then I got into up to, 10, 20, 15 units, up to 30-unit buildings in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay. And you held on to those?
No. That was primarily purchased to rehab and then flip immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have the wherewithal to be able to hold on to some of those things.
Okay. So what years did you do that? What was the
That was in the 1980s.
Okay.
I had actually started my career in real estate started in 1980, 81. I did that up until just the end of 1980s. At the peak of the market, I decided to – I wanted to retire. I wanted to now – you know, I had made it in real estate. I had become what those guys in the infomercials told me I'd become, and so I wanted to get out. And I ended up making probably one of the worst decisions of my life.
Is that the bankruptcy part of the title?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that was not real estate related.
No, not at all.
Other than, yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, had I stayed in real estate, I probably would have avoided that whole situation. But I decided that I would get into other businesses where I could, you know, live on an island somewhere and have checks coming into me. And I thought, I can do that. It sounds pretty comfy. But I made the mistake of... I gave up the responsibility of my own financial affairs to other people that, and quite frankly, didn't have the knowledge and the wherewithal that they said that they did. So that led me into a into having to file bankruptcy, and I pretty much wiped me out.
A lot of people view bankruptcy as sort of a tool of getting rid of debt, but you get to keep some of your stuff. How much of your stuff did you get to keep?
My shoes, which is what I used to walk home from the courthouse.
So you didn't have...
No, they took my car. They took everything. And when I say they took, you know, I hate to sound like a victim here because it wasn't. I was a victim of my own poor judgment.
Okay.
So I never give up that responsibility.
That sounds like the first statement in the 10-step program of how to get wealthy again.
Yeah, well, it is actually. After that, immediately, the only job I could get, I was living in Burbank at the time, was working at Shakey's Pizza. And they promptly gave me a little orange hat and an orange bow tie. And I always tell everybody, because I'm a little bit, you know, heavier in weight, I always tell, I look just like Porky Pig, you know. But I enjoyed myself. What I learned going through that process was when I had absolutely nothing to lose anymore, I had nothing left. I think it was the very first time that I was able to get in touch with what I was going to learn were the really important decisions you have to make to become wealthy and being able to hold on to that wealth. I would had I not gone through that whole downtime, mm-hmm. I'm afraid that I have to admit I don't think I would have learned these lessons as quickly.
How long did it take you to recover from this bankruptcy? Because I mean, you really had gone from making it in your head where you were done.
Yeah.
And now you're down to zero where you don't have a car. So not only that's a heck of an adjustment. How long did it take you to go and resurrect your will to go do the next plan?
Well, that came about, you know, honestly, I don't think I ever lost the will to create wealth. I think what happened was the emotional part of it. It's almost like a slap in the face. You have to wake up and realize, you have to confront the fact of, you know, I can make some really poor decisions, and at the top of, you know, of being on the financial scale. I mean, I was, you know, I didn't have to get up and do anything at that point.
Right.
But I made some really silly decisions. So once I was able to accept that, and that took a little bit of time, actually. I mean, the emotional part of it was like maybe, you know, I'd say almost a year for me to say, okay, I really, you know, because you're looking in the mirror going, you idiot. You know, every morning was like, if you'd only kept a little bit, why did you ever, all those things that you do to yourself. But there was a library that I would, that I'd walk to every day. I decided I was going to, you know, read a little bit of stuff, and it didn't cost me anything. So I would go there and I would read different stuff. And I read this one line in this success book one time that really, I remember that as being a defining moment. It said that the majority of millionaires in the United States had made their money in real estate and with no prior education, with no money, and with very little credit.
So you qualified.
Yeah, I thought, well, that's me. I'm actually a millionaire, and I didn't know it, you know. So that kind of lit the fire in me again, and that made me very curious, and I thought, well, maybe I was doing something incorrectly.
And what was the year... Let's say at this point, or after the year of bankruptcy, where were you?
Well, I ended up, I was trying to repay people back and trying to figure out the right, you know, because I did not want to go through bankruptcy, but it was a creditor who would not go along with a payment plan and pretty much forced me to do it. And once I, that was back in, I mean, I started going through that process in the early 90s, and I ended up in full bankruptcy. I think we ended up filing it by 93 or 94 or something like that.
Okay.
But my head was on pretty much straight by that time. So by 1995, I was already searching for where was I going to land and make my stand as far as a real estate investor. I mean, I had pretty much decided I get to get back to things that I know. I went back into appraising, and that saved me. That started giving me, you know, a pretty decent income. I was able to leave the pizza place, and I did miss that, I want you to know, because I got to learn how to make pizzas. And you have to understand, I love food. So I was really close to heaven when I was shoveling those pizzas with whatever I wanted into that oven. But I picked the Antelope Valley at the time, because back then I read in an article one time that the Antelope Valley had been named the foreclosure capital of the United States. And I thought, well, what do I got to lose there? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I started doing research, and I was buying, they were selling homes out there in the Antelope Valley at the time. And these are 1950s built, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 square foot homes for about $35,000, $30,000, $40,000. But yet they were renting for $500, $600, $700. Mm-hmm. Well, if anybody can do simple math, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that that house is going to cash flow. You know, you're going to have some a little bit of money from each one of those homes. I just had to figure out how to buy as many as I could.
Yeah, now I didn't realize you started kind of late in the cycle because foreclosure had been building at that point for at least 4 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But okay. I did some other things. I went and helped a friend of mine for a short time in Massachusetts with another business. He was almost in bankruptcy, and me having going through that, I actually helped him so that he didn't have to end up doing that. I had already learned that had I known a little bit better, I probably could have even avoided the actual bankruptcy, you know. But these are all things you learn along the way. By the time you figure them out, you're already coming out of the other end of the thing, you know. I was appraising.
That's what I was wondering. What was the inventory you were appraising? Were you appraising something to do with the foreclosure process?
Appraising. I was approved back then by the RTC,
okay.
Resolution Trust Corp, and I did a lot of stuff for them. The last thing I appraised, by the way, when I decided to full-time to investing, was 100,000 square foot shopping center in Ventura County, which I was paid $11,000 to do. So I had gotten back on my feet and I was starting to make some decent income, and then that puts some wind under your sails. You know, it makes you feel like, okay, I know what I'm doing again. You know,
right?
Before I got really heavy, I had income coming in, and I was able to you know, I was back to living a semi-normal life.
Right.
But the investing part, still your level of confidence isn't there because now you're going to go out on the limb again and you're going to start making decisions and you're pretty much on your own. Mm-hmm. And that took me a little bit. I went and found a hard money lender. I'm assuming everybody knows what that is. But, you know, the hard money lenders are folks that loan companies that are backed by investors that pretty much will loan you money on deals regardless of what your credit situation is.
Based on equity more than credit.
Yeah, exactly. And I went and met with somebody who decided that they were going to take a chance with me and back me up, and that helped me a great deal.
Now, it's interesting, in that interview, did you already have a plan in mind and you actually kind of showed them the direction you wanted to go?
Yes. One of the first things that I did was I did two things at the same time. One was I sat down and I decided that I needed to have, as everyone always has, some goal. My goal at that time was $1 million in net worth, which I was going to achieve by buying and keeping. You know, I was going to buy and sell, because I didn't have any money to hold on to anything at the time. But I was going to buy 10 houses. Back then, my goal was that they'd get to $100,000 value and I'd own them free and clear. Mm-hmm. So I would have $1,000 a month income. $1,000 a month. And then that would, after expenses, I figured about 25% expenses, and I'd end up with about $7,000 before taxes a month in income. The gross was, you know, $10,000, so that hit my goal. And then the houses would be worth $100,000 each, or I'd always have $1 million minimum, you know, equity. And that was my goal. And then from there, I have a real simple way of doing this for myself because, as you know, I'm pretty much ADD, so I got to keep things simple for myself. You know, I have a plan. I usually have my goal, and then I have a plan. And that was basically my plan was I was going to use single family homes to get there. And then I have my systems, which are the things that I develop or the decisions I make day to day to fulfill my plan. I did have that. And when I went to meet with the hard money lender, I laid that out for him. Mm-hmm. And he'd never had anyone come in and request to spend that kind of time with him. And he was very impressed with the fact that I told him the truth. I said, look, I'm bankrupt, but I have knowledge and I'm an appraiser and I have a decent income coming in now and I'm going to do this and this is where I want to get. And he stood up from that meeting and he had a reputation, by the way, of being kind of eccentric and a little bit crazy himself. But
yeah.
He shook my hand and he said, I believe you're going to do this, not for anything you've said here as much. He says, but I can feel your intensity and your commitment. And he used a couple of other words I can't use on your radio station. But he said, I really believe that you're going to do this. And he backed me up and then I took off.
Now, when you took off, now how do you go attract inventory in that cycle? Did you know really what to do? Was a direct hit on the inventory, or did you figure it out by trial and error?
Well, the real estate part of what I call the performance side of the business, you know, what price to pay, all that stuff, that was I understood that because that was a function of understanding values. It didn't take too long when I got out to the Antelope Valley. I think the very first day that I drove out there, although I had been out there before over the years appraising, and quite frankly, I didn't like to drive all the way out there. But I drove down a street, and I remember counting 10 houses, and out of the 10, three were boarded up.
Right.
I thought, well, I hit the jackpot here. Mm-hmm. So the number one thing was the performance side was pretty clear cut, and I was not by any means the only investor out there. I mean, it was swarming like bees, you know. But I zeroed in on one thing. There was a lot of HUD homes. There was a lot of VA property. There was all this kind of stuff. But I decided that I was wanting to get to know the agents that control foreclosure inventory.
Okay.
And I zeroed in at the fact that if I could become the person that they really want to deal with, that would save me a tremendous amount of time. Now, one thing that we've overlooked here in this interview, and I have to get off my
the
chest right away.
Four-letter word, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a four-letter word that I use, and I have to be very careful with this. But first of all, I want you to understand where I come from. Earlier I said, you know, I'm ADD. I have to tell you, there's two things that will describe me immediately to anyone. I'm very lazy.
That's the four-letter word.
I'm extremely lazy, and I don't consider myself to be all that bright. When I took my real estate exam to become an appraiser out of a classroom that might have had maybe 800 people in it, I was the last person to get up from that exam. And I was using every second of that time to get my test done. And I studied very hard for that test. I remember it because there was a gentleman who was, he seemed to be the Oriental persuasion. And he got up and he was in the chair in front of me, and he turned to me and he said, "Good luck." And I thought, okay, that's a moment. A gentleman who probably has a hard time with the English language finished his exam quicker than I did. Okay, so that kind of puts things in perspective for you.
Okay.
But I zeroed in that I had to really get to know those guys. And I went about trying to understand, how do I get those people to want to work with me?
Now, let's interject, because this is something I really didn't know until now, was
okay.
That somebody already was in first place and probably had been for years, because these agents had a buildup of inventory now from 91 to 94. So you enter the fray in the middle of them already having relationships number 1 through 10.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have to go from nowhere to main guy.
That's a very good point, because you know, many times I speak to people about this and they go, oh, you know, this is easy for you because maybe you have a nicer personality than I do and all that. And quite frankly, that's nonsense. The only thing that I really zeroed in on is that I had to be the best Tony Alvarez that I could be.
Okay.
And by that I mean is I had to really double check. And this gets into things about your own character. And I use that word and it conjures things up for everybody, you know. But I had to really understand myself and what I was willing to do a really good job. One of the things was I immediately decided that I would never lie to an agent about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to do that. So I wanted to become the person that they trusted the most, because I was willing to tell them the truth regardless of the consequences. That, believe it or not, became one of the most important things in developing my relationships with agents, because they get lied to 24 hours a day by everyone, even the people that they've been working with for years.
Okay.
You know, they call the guy up who's been their number one guy to give them another deal. The guy probably has five or six other properties he's out straight on. He can't take another deal. What he does is he doesn't return the phone call for 2 days and then pretends he was on vacation or he had some emergency. Well, this agent knows you that you're lying to him.
Right.
What he wants you to do is call him back up and say, hey, Don, I'm swamped. I can't take another deal. I love to do it, but I just can't. Then he can go on to do something else, and he respects the fact that you told him the truth. Now, that's a simple thing. When I went out to the Antelope Valley, I was, in fact, the last man on the totem pole.
Right.
This is why I always tell other investors, I haven't done anything that you cannot duplicate. I'm not that bright. I'm lazy as all get out. I mean, I got to really want to do something to get out of bed. When I went out to the Antelope Valley, not only that, I was not necessarily, my last name is Alvarez,
mm-hmm.
and everybody out, there wasn't too many Hispanic investors. And by that I mean that a lot of the folks that I had to go in and deal with, I didn't have that much in common with. And like I could say, hey, where are you from? I'm from born in Cuba. Oh, yeah, I got a friend that's from Cuba. No, most of the folks out there were kind of like John Wayne. And they really spoke a different language. They, you know, and people prefer to work with what's closer to them, mm-hmm. you know. So they already had their good old boy system, and they, you know, for me to walk in there, it was, I had to be somewhat creative.
Now, one of the things you had mentioned that you had done is that you had shared a plan with a hard money lender.
Yes.
Did you also do that with the agent?
Absolutely. It worked for me with the hard money lender. And as a matter of fact, what I did, Bruce, was I practiced doing that even with relationships that were also important but not as important. Like, for example, my insurance agent. I went to see him and I sat down with him and I said, you know, I'm going to need insurance from you, but I really want to make sure I get the right insurance. I want to explain to you what I plan on doing. And then I would watch to see their reaction as I was presenting this. It gave me the opportunity in a way to practice my presentation. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got to talking to an agent, I did that with a hard money lender. I did that with the insurance folks. I did that really with as many people as I could. Escrow, I shopped around for the right escrow company. I wanted somebody who would work and protect me.
So you built a team before you ended up with the volume, really.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
How quickly did the volume start to – it came from relationships.
Yes.
How quickly did this volume get to be pretty substantial?
Well, it took me probably about – I'd say about 4 to 6 months to really – well, let me go back. The first deal that I got took me 6 months to get that first deal.
Okay. You went from
– nothing.
Zero to one
to
in
one
six
deal.
Months.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a three-bedroom, one-bath house on a street called Robina. I paid $37,000 for that house.
It was from one of the agents that you were trying to build relationships.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Who, by the way – that agent ended up coming to me later on and saying to me, it was a lady, and saying to me, you know, I love working with you, but I don't really want to work this hard. You need to find another agent. That was an astonishing moment for me because I thought, wait a second, I'm the easiest thing you've ever had. But that was her decision. She went on to explain to me that she was a mom and she, you know, she got these listings and stuff, but, you know, that she really... That ended up to be one of the worst decisions of her career, I can tell you right now. But mm-hmm. she introduced me to another person, and that broker turned out to be one of the top agents for me, and also one of the best friends I have in real estate out in the Antelope Valley.
That now being referred, was that a
yes.
very positive thing?
Oh, absolutely, because I had a track record with her, and she called this guy up and said, hey. This guy is more your kind of guy. He's just like, that never stops, you know, and you need to really talk to him. So I went on and, you know, made some calls from there. And in all honesty, even though he had heard about me from her, he didn't have an open hands policy. You know, he wasn't that crazy about getting me into his office. I still had to kind of play a little bit of a trick on him to get into his office, whereas where I called to make an appointment. And I wasn't able to get one out of him, so I showed up 2 days later, pretty much, and just you know, asked for him. And he pretty much had to take me, you know, as because I was sitting in the lobby and I wasn't leaving until somebody saw me. You know? But you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that occurred to get me to that number one spot. But it took me about you know, that 6 months. I got the first house, and then. This is one thing that I want to make clear, because when you start to make these relationships, you go out to these areas. Like I went out to that area. I knew no one. The number one thing was this guy was saying to me, okay, I got a deal for you. So he finally calls me. Okay, he's got a deal. And this happened, by the way, with every single agent that I started working with. Well, that turns out to be the biggest dog property that you have ever seen. And why? They've already gone to all their regular guys. These guys don't want this deal.
Right.
So now he's got this house that he's got to pen off to somebody. And I'm the one guy going in saying, hey, you know, I'm willing to take whatever you got. I'll do whatever. So he says, hey, I get rid of this guy, you know. Now, how you handle that first deal that they hand you is going to determine whether you go a little bit closer to that first phone call or whether you remain off of that list permanently.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like you don't ever want to complain about anything. And one crucial thing is when I decided that I couldn't buy that deal, because I'm not suggesting somebody buy a deal if they can't make a profit, never.
Right.
But you must take the time to go in there and really explain in detail, like I did at the beginning, about what I want to do, why I can't make that deal. But if they can get the numbers right, I will buy it anytime.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we're going to have to end this session, but we're going to pick it up in the next session. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk a little bit about what happened with all the volume and then you getting into some training.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.